Today, we'll get into the details of my six-step Disney World trip planning process. That's coming up on this episode 55 of WW Prep to Go. Hello and welcome to WDW Prep to Go, where we talk strategy and ideas for people planning their Disney World trips. I am your host, Shannon Albert from WDWPrepSchool.com. Thank you so much for being here for episode 55. Today's episode seems so basic that it feels like something that should have been covered in maybe episode 1 and not episode 55, but here we are. We're going to talk about my six-step planning process. It's something you probably heard if you've listened to more than a few podcast episodes, because it's the structure that I like to use to talk about trip plans. For instance, I have a toddler trip plan or a princess trip plan. And anytime I interview first timers before and after their trip, the six-step planning process is what I use as the structure for those conversations. And so I have referred to it many times, but I realized I had never actually spoken about the process itself and what I suggest for every step. And it's something that I created right before I started the site. I decided that when I launch, I'm going to have an infographic. And I spent three weeks creating this huge infographic, which is basically just a graphic that conveys information. And mine happens to have a lot of information in it. And as I was creating it, I was having to sort of think about my own trips and mistakes I made and come up with a process that would break it down, make it less overwhelming, and be in the right order so that everything made sense. And so that's what I want to talk about today. It's the structure for everything I do and makes sense to cover it in an episode. Before we do that, I wanted to mention that at the end of every episode, I always give a link where you can get show notes. And this confuses people sometimes. They don't understand what I'm saying or how to get there. And so I just wanted to talk about that briefly. So at the end of this episode, I am going to say you can get the show notes at wwwprepschool.com/episode55, the number 55. And all you have to do is type that URL into your browser. Instead of going to just wwwprepschool.com, you just do /episode55. And that's a shortcut that will take you right to the show notes for this episode. It's just like a straight line there, so you don't have to search for it, which is especially helpful if you're listening to this after it goes live in September 2014, because it's going to get buried on the site. And so that'll take you right there. So just type that right in the browser. It'll take you to the show notes. You can also go to the site itself and click on podcast at the top, which will list all the podcast episodes. And then you can filter through those and find the one that you're looking for. And if you're using a podcast app that has a description in it, then the show notes will be in that app. So you don't even have to go to the website if you don't want to. So there's multiple ways to do it, but I just want to clarify that because I do get a lot of questions about it. So that is it. And don't forget, I always have a quick tip of the day at the very end. So let's start talking about this six-step planning process that I like to use for planning trips. Before we do, I wanted to mention that the ebook that I saw on the site has lots of bonus items that come with it. And one of the bonus items is a worksheet that you can fill out. So the idea is that you read the ebook that I wrote, and as you read it and work through the six-step planning process, you fill out this one-page worksheet. And then by the end of the ebook, you've got a worksheet that's completed with all the information about your trip on one printable piece of paper. So for the people listening to this, in the show notes, you will find a link to that. I will make that PDF downloadable for you. And it normally is only available as a bonus item with the ebook. So that is a free download available to you. And feel free to fill it out as you listen to this or as you work through the website or whatever. I just really like the idea of having everything in one piece of paper. And a lot of people who buy the ebook, they have a private email address to contact me at where I can review trip plans. And so they will send me that one page document and I can just review everything right there on one piece of paper, send back my feedback and thoughts for them. And it just makes it easy because it's all condensed. So let's dive in and feel free to print out that worksheet or fill it out online as we go. So step one in the planning process is to pick a date for your trip. And there are lots of variables that go into choosing a date. You might be locked into dates. For instance, you may want to go during spring break or over Christmas or something like that. So you might be locked in and maybe this is going to be decided for you. But if you've got some flexibility, then I always suggest that you look at my charts. I have huge charts. They're very Pinterest friendly and colorful and big. And I have them right now for 2014 and 2015. And it basically has just green, yellow, and red dots for every day of the year based on if it's going to be light crowds or moderate crowds or heavy crowds. And so I would recommend using those charts, which I will include a link to in the show notes. But some general guidelines are, you know, pretty basic, like holidays are going to be busier, summers are busy, Christmas and Easter tend to be the busiest, that kind of thing. And you may have heard me say this before, but if you're working around a school calendar, then I would go at the end of May or first week of June if you have a district that dismisses early, or if you have a district that goes back late. For instance, in September, then you may want to go the end of August because those are more moderate than peak summer crowds. Another thing that you might want to consider is if your spring break is not tied to Easter, then that's a good time to go because the temperatures are much more moderate than summer and the crowds are moderate as well. But anytime you have a week that's adjacent to Easter, it's going to be very, very busy. So if you go then I would just do it with caution and with a lot of planning. But anyway, so step one is to pick your dates. Now, once your dates are chosen, then step two is to choose where you're going to stay. Now, if you're going to, you have to, you know, there's a lot of different options, on-site, off-site, timeshares, this kind of thing. And for people that are staying on-site, you have some extra perks that off-site people don't get. And those include extra magic hours, which allow you to get in a park or stay late at a park. For only the people that are staying on site. And I have mixed feelings about extra magic hours, and I will link to a podcast where I discuss that. You also get to make all of your dining reservations 180 days in advance. And this is confusing for a lot of people because they say, well, if I stay off site, I get to make my reservations 180 days in advance, don't I? And the answer is yes, you do, but people staying on site get to make them for their whole trip. So they actually get to do it all in one sitting and they have the ability to book it for their whole trip. So the availability towards the end of the trip is going to be better because not as many people have access to those days. And I don't know if that makes any sense, but it is a slight benefit for people staying on site. Another perk is that you get to make your FastPass Plus reservations 60 days in advance when you stay on site. And this is, again, all in one sitting. Versus offsite people who make them 30 days in advance and they have to sit down and do them every day. It's 30 days before the day that they want to use them. So it'll be multiple times of getting online to make those reservations versus people staying on site who get to make them all at once. Another perk is the use of magic bands. Now, on-site guests use magic bands for getting into their hotel room, for park tickets, for FastPass Plus reservations, for charging to the room. Lots of things go on the magic bands. And so that's an on-site perk. Off-site guests just use their park tickets, which are kind of like a credit card in size and in feel. And so it's just, you know, it's the convenience of having it on your wrist versus pulling it out of your wallet or your lanyard. And then finally, on-site guests get room charging privileges. Off-site guests do not. So if you're going to choose between on-site or off-site, then those are some of the criteria that might convince you to stay on-site. Off-site certainly has more room a lot of times and lower prices. So there's some good reasons to do both, but I just wanted to kind of briefly cover some of those options. And I actually have a few different resources that I will link to in the show notes if you're trying to choose a resort. One is a post that is the pros and cons of every Disney World resort, and it is by far the most popular thing on the whole website. And so that might be helpful for you. I also have a quiz you can take where you answer some questions about what your budget is and what things you want in a resort, and it will tell you which resort it thinks that you should choose. And I have an entire chart, huge list thing that also lists out every resort and approximately how much it costs per night, how many people are allowed per room, which theme parks it's next to. So there's lots of different resources on the site that can be helpful to you. And so I will include links to all those things in the show notes. But anyway, so second step is to choose your resort. Now, the third step is to make a daily plan. And I think this is when it starts to get weird for people that don't realize how hard a Disney World trip is, because now you're starting to think about where you're going to be every day many months ahead of time. And this is important because it informs the rest of the steps in the process. So basically, the outcome of step three, the daily plan, is that you want to kind of know how many days you're going to be spending at each theme park, or maybe there's a break day in the middle, maybe there's a water park, Downtown Disney, etc. So every day you would have like day one, we're going to go to Magic Kingdom, day two, Epcot, day three, we're going to take a break, day four, we are going to Animal Kingdom, etc. So you kind of want to start to form a loose plan for each day of your trip. And you know, if you want to leave some things open, I might suggest your last full day be left sort of empty so that when you get there, you can figure out what you feel like you want to do more of. So I would just say, jot that down. Step three, daily plan, where are you going to be? After you know that, you then can decide park tickets. And I would call park tickets sort of a subsection of step three, because at this point, you know how many days you're going to be in the parks and which parks you're going to be going to. So you should know, you know, how many days of tickets you're going to need, if you're going to need park hoppers, that kind of thing. So I would just say, as sort of a step 3B, is that you can then figure out your park tickets. All right. Step four is to choose your dining. And I very intentionally put the steps in this order because I hate the idea of people planning their dining first and then making their plans around that, because you really need to know where you're going to be and then eat there. Do not go all over the place, because you're going to be spending too much time on buses, and that is not a fun way to spend a trip. So once you have your daily plan, then I would look at it and say, okay, I'm going to be at Magic Kingdom on my first day. What restaurants are in the Magic Kingdom or near the Magic Kingdom that I can then choose for that day? And I would do that for every day of your trip. The only time I recommend reversing these steps is if you don't have a full 6 months to plan and your dining options are limited, then I would suggest choosing your dining options first and then forming your daily plan around that. But if you've got more than 6 months, do step three, their daily plan, then move on to step four and choose dining. This chronology is based on mistakes that I have made. And I ended up sitting on buses with a toddler that was screaming and was just exhausted, tired, hungry, and didn't want to be on a bus again to go to a restaurant that was going to take 30 minutes to get to. You know, we were staying on the boardwalk on our very first trip with a 3-year-old, and I didn't take advantage of the restaurants on the boardwalk. I was going other places. And that is pointless. So I feel very strongly about this. And I think that you should choose your dining. And by the way, when you're staying on the boardwalk, you're also very close to Epcot. And so there's tons of options right there. And I really should have taken advantage. I know that now. And so hopefully you will not have the same predicament, because now I'm telling you all about my issues. So I know step four, choosing your dining options, is a long step. There's a lot of choices to choose from, and there's a lot of decisions to make, but that would be step four. Then after you know your dining choices, obviously you're ready to make those reservations 180 days beforehand. After that, then step five is to plan your park touring. And this used to be a little bit more loose and optional than it is now, but now with FastPass Plus, this is even more required. We didn't used to have to plan this stuff quite so far ahead of time, but now you need to make sure it's planned more than 2 months ahead of time if you're staying on site, because you need to be ready to make your FastPass Plus reservation. So you're going to take your daily plan, and you're going to, on your park days, figure out what you want your touring plans to be for those days. Now, I don't suggest planning every minute of every day, and I don't even suggest planning for the entire day. My suggestion for your touring plans is to plan to be there before the park opens, usually, unless you have a good reason to be late. And write as many things as you can when you get there, especially things that are going to be popular later in the day, and make use of FastPass Plus usually late morning, early afternoon. And then in the afternoon, let's say around lunchtime, you can discuss with your travel group what you want to do the rest of the day. Do you want to take a break? Do you want to go see some shows? Do you want to go to a kiosk and get another FastPass Plus or something else, etc.? So my goal here for you is to have a plan from park opening and through early afternoon, and then leave the rest of the day more spontaneous. And to me, this is the perfect marriage of structure and flexibility. And I think a lot of people equate vacations with being laid back and having fun and spontaneous. But I think with Disney, you just can't do that, or you're going to end up in a lot of lines. So to me, this is the perfect combo to start your day structured, and then you can be flexible later on. So hopefully it's a good compromise and allows people to have, the best of both worlds. One issue I have with detailed touring plans that say, do this at 9:12, do this at 9:31, do this at 9:54, is that it puts a lot of pressure on people to run around and make sure they hit their mark. And that bothers me, especially with little kids, because if little kids spot a character walking in the street, or they want to stop and look at something that you didn't know existed, you should do that. Those are the moments you're going to remember. You're not going to remember running from point A to point B to point C and hitting your mark. You're not being graded for this. So I would just, keep in mind as you're sort of planning that your goal is to have fun, not to do everything. But having a structure in place beforehand prevents you from having to stop and research on a park map right in the middle of Magic Kingdom. So I feel very passionately about that, because I grew up in a house that didn't work that way. And our trips were more focused on running around and checking things off a list, as opposed to seeing, our family as real people who have, interests and might spontaneously find something fun. So I would just suggest not running around. My ideal touring plans, and I'm going to launch hopefully someday a system that does this, is touring plans that are broken down by hour. So you might say, between 9 and 10, I want to accomplish these three things. Between 10 and 11, these three things. And just have that for the first, few hours of the day. And then the rest of the day is more open. Like, do you want to see that show, or have a snack and, have an ice cream cone or whatever. So anyway, I would suggest having touring plans. And of course, I have touring plans on the site. And for every park, I have a regular touring plan that I suggest for most people. And then I have touring plans that are for little ones, because they are not tall enough to ride some rides. And so I have a separate plan that I suggest for them. And so, of course, I will link to that in the show notes. I also have a quick reference chart for FastPass Plus, so that you can see quickly what's available and which ones are higher priority, which ones I recommend. And so I will also include that in the show notes so that you have that as a quick reference. So that is step 5, park touring. Step 6 is the last step, and it's optional, but I think to me this is the fun part, and that is to add extra magic. And this can be lots of things. So for instance, one time my sister-in-law surprised us and had scavenger hunt books that she had printed ahead of time so that the kids could explore the resort. We were staying at Port Orleans Riverside, and so it was a fun day a fun thing to have on arrival day, and got us very familiar with the resort very quickly. That was one thing that she just created on her own. You can also have in-room celebrations, which is a really fun thing through the Disney Florist. You can also make sure Tinkerbell visits your hotel room. And since many of you listen with your children and have asked me not to give away too many secrets, I will just say that I will link to more information about that in the show notes if you would like to read more about having Tinkerbell visit. You could also do things like have a plan on pressing coins there, and you could decorate tubes to put your coins in ahead of time. You can also have mouse keeping envelopes printed. Like, it doesn't have to be expensive, but it could. You could book a special cruise to watch fireworks, or you could just make sure you have special envelopes printed. But I just think these creative touches are what makes the whole planning process fun. And it's really up to you how you interpret it. So I think it's a really good idea. And I hope that that's something that you will add to your trip. So I hope this information is helpful. It is just, it's the backbone of everything that I do. It makes tons of sense to me and hopefully to you as well. And hopefully makes the whole process less overwhelming as you sit down to try to put together a trip plan, because there are a lot of steps and a lot of thinking to do. I do have a quick tip of the day. And this would have fit in nicely with the last episode, which was about special parties, but I forgot to include it then, so I'm going to include it now. So here's the quick tip. If you are attending a party such as Mickey's Not So Scary Halloween Party or Very Merry Christmas Party, your party ticket will get you into the park as early as 4 o'clock, even though the party does not begin until 7. If that is the only park you're going to that day, you can actually get FastPass Plus reservations between 4 and 7. There are no FastPass Plus reservations at the parties, and a lot of times you won't need them because the lines are short, but you can get them between 4 and 7. So a lot of people will get something from 4 to 5, 5 to 6, 6 to 7. So there you go. There's your 3 FastPass Plus reservations, and you can use your ticket to get in. Now, I try to make the content on the site and the podcast and everything evergreen, meaning that it will always apply even if you listen a year later. If Disney changes the policy on this, I will update the show notes to say that. But as of right now, you can get FastPass Plus reservations from 4 to 7 if you only have a party ticket for that day and do not have a park ticket. So I hope that is helpful. And I do think that's going to wrap up this episode of WW Prep to Go. For more information on this episode, you can go to wwprepschool.com/episode55. That is the number 55. Until next time, I'll see you on the site.